It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
people have until October 15th of 2008 to claim the stimulus rebate. And there's a large number of people in the Richmond area who have not done so. Richmond is 46th on the list of the top 100 cities where there are unclaimed or potentially unclaimed economic stimulus rebates.
Paul Harrison from the Community Tax Law Project gives us tax tips that could save you hundreds or even thousands of dollars. And following up from last week's interview on child custody, we answer a listener's question about how, when, and why a child custody order can be changed during our weekly question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. Almost 125,000 Virginians still have not filed the needed forms to receive their economic stimulus payments or tax rebates from the federal government. That's because many older and low-income residents who were not required to file income tax returns in 2007 don't realize they still qualify for the tax rebate, and they can receive it by sending in a simplified tax form even though the annual income tax deadline has passed. Payments, which are worth a minimum of $300 per person, are not getting to many of the people who need them most to cover basic expenses like food and shelter. These payments could put more than $37 million into Virginians' hands and help struggling people to make ends meet. The deadline for filing is October 15. It takes only a few minutes, and there are free resources for those who need assistance, including the local IRS offices and the Community Tax Law Project at 804-358-5855 or online at www.ctlp.org. In other news, the Federal Trade Commission, or FTC, estimates that as many as 9 million Americans have their identities stolen each year. The FTC plans to survey identity theft victims and examine the remedies available under the Fair and Accurate Credit Transactions Act of 2003, or FACT Act. The FACT Act gives consumers the right to place fraud alerts on their credit files if they are, or suspect they may become, victims of identity theft, to block information on their credit reports that resulted from identity theft, and to obtain copies of their credit reports free of charge. The survey will ask identity theft victims about their experiences when they contacted credit reporting agencies and sought to use their rights under the FACT Act. To learn more about your rights if victimized by identity theft, go to www.idtheft.gov or call toll-free 1-777-ID-THEFT FT. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is homestead deed. A homestead deed is a legal paper filed with your circuit court clerk's office to protect property from your creditors. You don't have to own a home to file a homestead deed. During your lifetime, each adult household member can claim homestead exemptions up to $5,000, plus an additional $500 for each dependent living with you. You can claim the entire exemption in your first deed, or you can claim less and save some of the exemption for later. However, once you claim the exemption, you can't switch it to cover other property. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's legal term of the week.
You're tuned in to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on WRIR 97.3, Richmond Independent Radio. It's time once again for our weekly question and answer session, and we're here in the studio with a questioner. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
Hello, my name's Tanika. I'm from Midlothian, Virginia.
Thanks for being on the show, Tanika. What's your question for us?
My question is in regards to child custody. How do you go about changing a custody order?
I'm going to have to ask you a few more questions to answer that one. First of all, where was the prior child custody order entered?
You mean what locality?
Yes, ma'am.
Chesterfield, Virginia.
Okay, and was it in the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court, or was it in the Circuit Court?
Juvenile and Domestic.
Okay, that's a fairly straightforward question to answer. What you would do is you would go back to the Chesterfield County Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court, and you would file what's called a motion to amend or review order. It's a simple, single-page form that the court has, and you basically list the date of the prior order and what the prior order did, and you basically list how you want it changed. The trick to a motion to amend or review a child custody order is that you cannot bring up anything that happened on or before the date that the prior order was entered. That's kind of like a closed book. You can't reopen that book. But anything that happened after the last child custody order was entered can and should be brought up. However, what should be brought up really is what we in the law call a material change in circumstances. That is, something important that changes the situation since the last order was entered that you feel justifies a change in the custody or visitation arrangements or order that was previously entered. What in your case would be the material change in circumstances?
Residency, like we have joint custody. I have every other weekend, but I'm more leaning to now having my child live with me on a permanent basis and visit with the opposite parent, and you know, like every other week, like I was doing.
Right. Well, you would have to show that it was in the child's best interest for that to happen, and that there was something important that had changed since the prior custody order. So if your home situation has improved, you know, that certainly is a good reason. If the opposing party's home situation has worsened, then that would also be a good reason. Is the child in the Richmond area?
Yes. The child lives in Chester, Virginia.
Okay, so that's basically within the same county, within the same jurisdiction, may not be within the same school system, and so that certainly would be an issue. But the bottom line is that just as with the initial custody order, the court looks first to the best interests of the child. In this case, in terms of changing child custody or visitation, again, the court's going to look at what is in the child's best interest. The court's not supposed to favor the mother or the father, but look to what's in the child's best interest. Is that helpful to you?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and we're here at the Community Tax Law Project office. We're speaking with Paul Harrison, who is the director of the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
First question I have for you is, tell us exactly what is the Community Tax Law Project?
We are a nonprofit organization that specializes in helping low-income individuals who have problems with the Internal Revenue Service. These are called tax controversies, and we offer assistance to people either through direct representation or by arranging for one of our pro bono volunteers to help the taxpayer.
And do you serve people just in Richmond and Central Virginia, or is this a statewide program?
We're a statewide program. Any resident of Virginia who has a tax problem with the Internal Revenue Service or with the Virginia Department of Taxation can contact us, and we'll investigate the case and determine what, if anything, we can do to help.
Okay. And how low income do you have to be to qualify for services from the Community Tax Law Project?
Our basic requirement is that people have incomes that do not exceed 250% of the federal poverty level.
Now, one of the issues in the news right now in terms of tax law is the economic stimulus payment or tax rebates that came out in the spring. Who qualifies for those?
Any person who has a valid Social Security number, both the individual and spouse, if they're married filing jointly, have to have valid Social Security numbers. They must have filed a 2007 tax return. They may not be claimed as a dependent on anybody else's 2007 tax return, and they must have had at least $3,000 in qualifying income.
What is considered qualifying income?
Qualifying income is any kind of earned income, income you get from a job, income you get from self-employment, plus income from Social Security retirement, Social Security disability insurance, Veterans Administration benefits, Tier 1 railroad retirement benefits.
So if it's pure welfare like SSI? Or
SSI is not income under the Internal Revenue Code, and so it's not qualifying income for the stimulus package.
Well, is it too late for someone to claim a tax rebate for this year?
No, it's not. People have until October 15th of 2008 to claim the stimulus rebate. And there's a large number of people in the Richmond area who have not done so. Richmond is 46th on the list of the top 100 cities where there are unclaimed or potentially unclaimed economic stimulus rebates.
So what do you have to do to claim a tax rebate?
What people need to do is to file a Form 1040A, particularly if they are Social Security recipients or SSDI recipients or VA benefit recipients who would not normally file a tax return. They need to indicate on the form how much they received in benefits during the year and simply mail that in. The government will process the return and mail or electronically deposit the rebate.
And that October 15th deadline, does that mean postmarked by October 15th?
Postmarked on or before October 15th.
Now, in general, is it important that people file an income tax return every year? And how do you know if you are required to file an income tax return?
That's a good question. It is important to file an income tax return because if people have worked in jobs where they've had withholding, they may have had income tax withheld, which they could get back if they filed a tax return. Many people who are eligible for the earned income tax credit could receive even more than they had withheld as a result of the earned income tax credit. There's a great large number of dollars that go unclaimed every year for people who are eligible for the EIC, but simply don't file the return.
Well, now what if you don't have earnings, but you get money, say, from Social Security benefits or VA or railroad retirement? Should you file anyway, even though you may not be required to?
There's probably little or no point to filing a tax return other than for 2007 because of the economic stimulus payment. Social Security benefits, if that's the only form of income a person is receiving, those are generally not taxable unless a person earns more than what's called the threshold amount, which is $25,000 for an individual and $30,000 for a married couple. Usually, people are more likely to file a tax return if they're receiving a combination of benefits, say from a 401k or other private pension or an IRA, plus their Social Security. Then they have taxable income as a result of their private pension.
Now, earlier you mentioned the earned income tax credit as being one of the really important reasons that wage earners or self-employed people should file a tax return. Tell us, what is the earned income tax credit?
The earned income tax credit is an incentive program. It's the largest dollar amount in federal anti-poverty funds in the nation. It offers a credit, a tax credit, which is refundable to individuals who go to work. It's particularly targeted at parents, both single parents and two-parent families that have low incomes, basically as an incentive for those people to stay in jobs that are not particularly well-paying. The earned income credit offers people a refundable credit of up to $4,500. You file your tax return, you calculate what was withheld from your paycheck, what your tax obligation is, and then you calculate the earned income tax credit. The credit is treated as if it were money withheld from your paycheck and prepaid against your tax liability. Anything in excess of what you owe for taxes is refunded to you. So a person earning $11,000 or $12,000 a year with two children, or a family with an income of $11,000 or $12,000 and two children, could get nearly $5,000 in earned income tax credit refunded to them in addition to any amounts that were withheld.
Now, do you have to have children in order to claim the earned income tax credit?
You don't have to have children to claim the earned income tax credit. Anybody over 25 and under 65 who earns less than, and there's a sliding scale, would get a much smaller earned income tax credit in the neighborhood of $400 or $500 at the most. It's not as big a credit for childless workers, but it's still there.
Tell us what type of tax problems the Community Tax Law Project generally helps people with. I'm sure there must be a wide array.
There's a wide array of problems. Probably about 40% of our clients are parents who have claimed the earned income tax credit and are entitled to the earned income tax credit, but for one reason or another are not getting it from the federal government. Usually this is because their partner, the non-custodial parent, has claimed the children on his tax return, or because some other taxpayer has claimed the children on their tax return, or because the IRS has questions about the validity of the claim. There's a process which is somewhat involved for proving that your children live with you, that they are your children, and that they otherwise meet the tests for the earned income tax credit. And we offer assistance in helping people assemble the documents and provide the verification to the IRS that shows that they're entitled. An additional 40% of our clients come from what we call collection cases, where they have a debt to the IRS for income taxes that they're unable to pay at this time. And there are a variety of processes that are quite complicated that people can invoke to pay by installment, to make an offer in compromise, to settle the debt for less than the entire amount, or to have their account reported as currently not collectible, which prevents the IRS from invoking its enforced collection, its power to levy bank accounts or paychecks or, in some cases, SSDI or Social Security payments.
I know one of the things that people often run into trouble with is if the spouse has filed an income tax return and you didn't know what was on it and you're getting stuck for what may be your spouse's tax liability. Do you help people with problems
yes.
like that?
Yes. The innocent spouse relief or Section 6015 relief is increasing in the present circumstances, that people find themselves finding out well after the fact, usually after a divorce, that some portion of their spouse's income was not reported. And generally, we find that our clients are the ones that the IRS can find, and so they are getting the bills for these tax debts that they really had no knowledge about or had no involvement in. That's probably about, right now, probably about 5 or 10% of our cases.
So it sounds like if the IRS finds you need to find the Community Tax Law Project.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you're getting mail from the IRS and it doesn't include a refund check, give us a call. And at the very least, we can give you some advice over the telephone on what to do.
And how do people reach the Community Tax Law Project?
They can call us at our Richmond number, which is 804-358-5855. And they would speak to our office manager, Myrna Hernandez. We would do an intake and begin investigating the case. We also have a toll-free number, which is 1-800-295-0110.
Thank you for that information. That we did this program in particular because of that upcoming deadline of October 15th for the people to claim their economic stimulus payment or tax rebate. When's the next time folks really need to start thinking about tax problems?
Probably as they begin to prepare for the 2008 filing season, which will start after the first of the year. Many, many low-income people like to file their tax returns early, and so they begin looking for tax preparers around Christmas time or shortly after the first of the year. And that's a good time for people to begin to think about getting assistance from either one of the free tax preparation sites or some other reliable tax preparer.
And that sounds like a good time for us to have another interview with the Community
great.
Tax Law Project.
Sounds great.
Thank you very much, Paul. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
This week's top three tips are about small claims court. The first tip is that you can sue someone in the small claims division of the general district court for up to $5,000 on your own, by yourself, without an attorney. No attorneys are allowed in small claims court. The second tip is that you get a much faster trial in small claims court. In the regular division of the general district court, if a case is contested, the trial usually is set for several months after the first court date. In the small claims division of the general district court, the first court date is the trial date. The third tip is that the rules of evidence are more relaxed in small claims court, and the judge will let you present your case the best way you know how. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. 1 million Virginians have no health insurance, but many would qualify if they knew about government programs available to them. Join us for the next two Wednesdays at 12:30 p.m. when our guest, Virginia Poverty Law Center Jill Hankin, explains the complex rules to get Medicaid and other government health insurance in a two-part interview on benefits for the elderly and disabled and benefits for families with children. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbrink.